Welcome to this session of the legislation of hate and fear in Arizona. I kind of was for a long time looking for different titles for this show, for this discussion, and one of the other ones was fear and loathing in Arizona. Now, is there anybody else here from Arizona? It doesn't look like it. So what we wanted to do, first of all, was say that both Carmen and I, I'm Mesa, born and raised in Mesa, Arizona. Carmen is a legal immigrant from Brazil.
I could be legal, though.
She could be legal. I could be a better check. We are by no means experts in the law, but we are, in fact, eyewitnesses to what's been going on in Arizona for the last few months, last few years, and me for the last 58 years of my life. What I wanted to do was start out, we're not going to talk a lot about the law. The law is, I don't know, how many pages long? 20-some pages or something. I try to read the law, but...
Hundreds of
pages. It's full of legalese, and of course, as you know, it can be interpreted in many different ways, okay? One thing we do know is that this law is being has been implemented for the last few years by a very sadistic sheriff, Joe Arpaio. You might have heard of him, America's meanest sheriff. He's been arresting people indiscriminately for years now based on how they look. He arrests you upon pulling you over for traffic stops, broken taillight, broken windshield, arrests you first, and then you have the burden of proof to prove that you are, in fact, a legal citizen. So I'm going to take you back in time right now. I want to put this into perspective, especially because so many of our people here are Christians and very concerned about the role of Christianity in our society. So I kind of want to bring that into the conversation as well. So let me start with Deuteronomy. The Lord God secures justice for the orphan and for the widow. He cares for the foreigner amongst you, giving him food and clothing. You too then should love the foreigner. Were you not immigrants in the land of Egypt? Okay, the law. Okay, the stereotyping that anybody can be pulled over, stopped, and questioned about their legal status in Arizona. Before this law was ever, before it wasn't even signed into law, Carmen and I were stopped in southern Arizona. I was speeding. I didn't see the change. The sheriff asked me for my ID. We were on our way to Mexico. I gave him my passport. He then asked Carmen for her proof of citizenship. She wasn't driving. He had no right to ask her for her ID, for her passport. She wouldn't give it to him. I insisted she give it to him because I don't mess with the police, especially the sheriff on
Southern Arizona
in the middle of the desert. You also should know that along with this law, it's just been passed a law to outlaw ethnic studies in Arizona. The next law they want to pass is children born of illegal immigrants in this country, they will also be illegalized. And then after that, Chicanos are next. Mexican American, second and third generation. This is what they're telling us, okay? Also, language is very important in this whole debate. What is the difference between an immigrant and a migrant? How about a refugee? What do these words mean? What are the ramifications of these words? Okay, I also love the words deception, deceit, denial, and delusion. This whole aspect of delusion I want to talk about as well. Okay, Phoenix is located in the Salt River Valley of Arizona. Around the year 1300 BC, a group of indigenous people established a very highly developed civilization in what today we call the Valley of the Sun. Not only were they farmers, but they were amazing engineers and architects as well. They built a series of canals that channeled the water from the Salt River for hundreds of miles throughout the valley. These canals were 30 feet wide and 10 feet deep. They dug these canals with stone and wooden tools. Not only were they great engineers, but they left evidence of very well-built, constructed, three-story adobe buildings, very sophisticated ceremonial sites, and the same type of ball courts you find throughout Central America, Mexico, were also found in southern Arizona. These people were called the Hohoka. And they also had a system of trade that was throughout the Southwest, and once again, all the way to Anahuac. Anahuac is what we call Central Mexico, the area around Mexico City. Around 1200 BC, the Hohokam abandoned their the area of the Phoenix area of the Southwest and migrated south into Mexico. At this time, the area of the Southwest was known as Aztlán. Has anybody ever heard the term Aztlán? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, that's a much hated term because it refers to the Southwest as the original homeland of the Aztecs. The Aztecs came from Aztlán. That's why they're called the Aztecs. Mexicans believe Aztlán to be the Gila, Salt, and Colorado River valleys of Arizona. The Southwest was later called Pimeria Alta by the Spanish who first came there because of the Pima, whose territory expanded from the Salt River Valley all the way into northern Mexico. Later, it was called Mexico Grande. For hundreds of years, it was referred to as Mexico Grande because it was part of Mexico. When the Hohokam left the valley, some of their descendants stayed. The Spanish called them the Pima and the Papago, derogatory terms that mean bean eaters. They referred to themselves as the Aquimel Otam, the river people, and the Tohono Otam, the desert people. They were also farmers, and they were very peaceful. When the Spanish came through, they claimed that the river people could grow more crops with very little water than any people they had seen anywhere in their travels. Around 1870, white settlers began to pass through Arizona. Most of them just passed through on their way to California in the gold rush in the promised land of California. Arizona was very barren, and of course they were also terrorized by the marauding Apaches, Geronimo you all know about. The Apache had come down from the north. They were the Diné people. So they were migrants migrating. On their migration route, they came through Arizona. And then later on, the true immigrants arrived in the Valley of the Sun. Now, I don't want to point any fingers or indict any one ethnic group or religion, but the first immigrants to the valley were the Mormons. Of course, they were being persecuted fiercely all throughout the United States. And finally, when they arrived in Arizona, they were under the delusion that they had arrived at their Garden of Eden, their promised land. And why not? They arrived at a valley. There was nobody there. No white people were there. Very few. There was a lot of naked Indians. Lots of them. Thousands. Tens of thousands. There were rivers full of fish. And a canal system already laid out for them. The Indians were peaceful. As a matter of fact, the Indians found them starving to death, dying in the desert. They were dying in the desert, and the Indians found them, gave them water, gave them food, and even gave them land to settle. Not only that, the Indians protected them against the Apache. So they were safe. They were in their promised land. But nearby, there were Mexicans. Of all things, there were Mexican villages. One of them was named San Pablo. They changed the name, now they call it Tempe, Tempe, Arizona. Okay? These were Mexican people, but they were in fact displaced Indians and mestizos who were displaced from the conquest that had already happened hundreds of years ago, but was continuing constantly displacing people and pushing them further north. Many of these people already spoke the language of the Pima de Papago. They were Uto Azteca. So their language were related, and they had already been trading for hundreds of years. This was not a foreign land. The land now was called Sonora, the Sonoran Desert, which is Arizona is part of the Sonoran Desert, in northern Mexico is also part of the Sonoran Desert. So they were just following these ancient migratory paths and these trade routes. The Mormons believe that this was their land, was given to them by God. Now, this is by no means unique to the Mormons, okay? But the Mormon doctrine does teach that all great accomplishments of Native people were really the contribution of white people, allegedly Israelites and Lamanites, who the Mormons imagine to have been white. Native and Mexican brown people, their skin is a result of a curse that will be removed if they are converted to Mormonism. This extremely racist doctrine gave them the right to seize more land than they were graciously given by the Pima, and gave them the right to exploit the cheap labor of their other cursed brown neighbors, the Mexicans. But the so-called curse for the native actually began with the coming of the Mormons to what came to be Mesa. The damming of the rivers without consulting or even telling the natives that the river was going to stop flowing. The Pima and the Akimelotam, their river people, their whole culture, their whole way of life was based upon the river. No river meant no culture. Their food source was destroyed. They could no longer live off the land because the land was no longer theirs. But the very gracious Mormons, their Christian neighbors, gave them flour, lard, salt, sugar, and alcohol. So today, they now have the highest amount of diabetes in the whole world, the Pima and the Papago. They also learned to hate themselves and to hate each other. They learned shame because they were covered in clothing, they were naked, the Mormons couldn't stand to see them naked. I'm not an old man, but I remember when I was a kid, the Pimas would come into town on wagons, and the Mormons would be there lovingly putting shawls around them to hide their naked breasts. And this was in the 50s. And at that time, like many other Indians throughout the Americas, they were now ashamed to be Indians. Enter my great-grandfather, Gumercindo Payán de Castro, from San Juan Capistrano, a Mission Indian. He fled the indiscriminate killing of Indian peoples in Southern California. During the Gold Rush, and many years after, Indians were indiscriminately being killed for their land and for sport. So he fled California, he came to Arizona, and he found work driving a mule train from Mesa to the Roosevelt Dam that was being built. So he joined many thousands of other indigenous people, predominantly Indians and mestizos, who were also fleeing the Mexican Revolution, another war against Indians and the poor in Mexico. Gumercindo's son-in-law, Pedro Guerrero, my grandfather, who was born in Solomonville, Arizona, he became one of Mesa's outstanding civic leaders and businessmen. But this didn't stop the insults and berating of him and his children for their cursed brown skin. Then I come along. Sarco Guerrero, that's me. My parents and our grandparents told us that we were Americans. We were born in this country. We weren't born in Mexico. We were born in the United States. We were Americans. They told us we were Americans. The reason they told us is we were Americans is because they knew that everybody else was going to tell us we weren't Americans. And we soon found out when we went to school, people would say, "What are you?" We would say, "We're Americans." They said, "No, you're not. You're Mexicans." Not only were we Mexicans, but we were dirty Mexicans, and we were lazy Mexicans. So no matter how much we tried to, you know, proclaim that we were Americans, we were never given the opportunity to be Americans. So at this time, we grew up in a little Mexican neighborhood in Mesa, Arizona. And oddly enough, a Mormon family moved into our neighborhood. We knew about the Mormons, but we never had any in our neighborhoods. The first family to move into our neighborhood was a white Mormon family, and they were poor. But the Mormons were always a class above us, and we were lower class, and they were higher class. But here we had some poor Mormons move into our neighborhood, and they became part of the neighborhood. And when fights would break out or arguments would break out playing football or baseball, this was the language that they used against us, that we were dirty Mexicans, lazy Mexicans. And this person, one of the family was called the Pierce family, and the oldest brother was Russell Pierce. And I remember Russell, even though he was older than me. I knew his other brothers who were more my age. But in the neighborhood, he was the neighborhood bully. He was the mean guy that we tried to get away from. Later on, we learned as we grew up and graduated from high school that Pierce became a sheriff, and he was shot by, supposedly, an illegal immigrant. That's what he says. We don't know. We also know that he was once arrested for spousal abuse. Now, fear and hatred. Why? What happened? Where did this fear and hatred come from that eventually became this law? Well, I left Mesa in about 1972, and I migrated to Mexico. But I was legal in Mexico. And when I came back to the United States about 10 years later, I came back to Mesa. My town, Mesa, Arizona, had transformed. It looked like Mexico. All of a sudden, there were Mexican businesses. The downtown area that was deserted was now full of Mexican restaurants, carnicerias, dance halls, shopping centers. On Saturday afternoon, you could go to the Mexican restaurant and there would be bandas of playing Mexican music, the roasting of green chilies you could smell blocks away, of carne asada. It was a fiesta was going on in Mesa. There were guys pushing little carts selling paletas and churros. And I realized I don't have to go to Mexico no more. Mexico was here. And it was a wonderful feeling. It brought color. It brought aromas. It brought a vibrant lifestyle to downtown Mesa that didn't exist before that time. Business was booming. The Mexicans had come here displaced by NAFTA that I voted for because I thought NAFTA was going to help the poor people of Mexico. Delusion. I was delusional. It did quite the opposite. It made Mexicans, the poor, dirt poor Mexicans, even poorer. They couldn't even afford to sell their beans and their corn because we subsidize our corn in this country. They can buy it cheaper than the Mexicans can sell. So now the migration of Mexicans was predominantly indigenous people from Mexico. Zapotecs, Mixtecs, Maya, you name it. Before I knew it, there was a population of 1,000 Aztec-speaking people in Mesa. These people, they don't even consider themselves Mexican. See what I'm saying? They're indigenous people. So when this happened, all of a sudden, Russell Pierce and our sadistic sheriff, as well as our goofball governor, started this whole campaign of hate and fear against Mexicans. All of a sudden, they became criminals. And all of a sudden, the word immigrant replaced the word migrant. And oddly enough, when you think about it, during the Reagan administration, another term was imposed upon us. Now we weren't Mexicans anymore, we were Hispanics. Now what's wrong with the word Hispanic? Sounds like a good word, right? Mexicans speak Spanish, Cubans speak Spanish, Latin Americans speak Spanish. What's wrong with the word Hispanic is that many people of Mexican descent are not Hispanic. They're indigenous. To call them Hispanic would be a mistake, right? It's a delusion. We're not Hispanics. We have some Spanish heritage, but we're in fact indigenous. The minute we call ourselves Hispanics, that means we're no longer indigenous, and we are in fact immigrants, and we could be illegal, okay? That's where the term Chicano comes from. Remember, we weren't allowed to be Americans, and we weren't Mexicans either. They wouldn't let us be Americans, and we weren't born in Mexico, so we called ourselves Chicanos, which emphasized our indigenous heritage and brought pride to the Chicano community that we were, in fact, indigenous, and we were going to proclaim our indigenous heritage and be proud of it and be who we are instead of being told who we are. And now, what happened was the Mexicanization of Mexico, of Mesa, Arizona. People jokingly started calling it Mexico because the language that you heard was Spanish. You go to Home Depot and all the signs are in English and Spanish. You go to Walmart, English and Spanish. Almost every restaurant you went to or hardware store, everything was bilingual. I was in line one time and this guy told me, you know, that it pissed him off that everything was written in Spanish. That why don't these people learn English? And I said, well, this isn't for the Spanish speakers to learn English, it's for the English speakers to learn Spanish. But he didn't think that was funny. So now we have the immigrants, the migrants are no longer migrants. Now they're immigrants. Now they're illegal immigrants. And now there's a new word called crimigrants. Because now they're criminals. Okay? That's a whole other issue, the issue of all these prisons that are popping up all over the Southwest, all along the border. These aren't federal prisons. These aren't state prisons. These are private correctional institutions that receive money from the federal government and don't have to answer to state or local authorities. We refuse to use the word refugees. Refugees from what? Poverty, hunger, and the drug wars we hear about constantly in the media, right? So now, here we are, a Christian nation passing laws to put people in jail, to criminalize them, to destroy families, to make poor people even poorer, to instill fear in people who are already scared to death, and to relegate them before they were relegated to a lower class, a lesser status in our society, and now they're all potential criminals. So, where has this taken us so far? And where is it going to go? Where is this law going to end? Because this is just the first, and they will tell you, this is just the first of many laws that are getting ready to be passed. I'm going to let Carmen tell a little bit about the economic impact and what that booming economy in Mexico, what happened to it in just 2 years.
Well, it's no secret that Arizona is down the drain with economics. There has been a flight of people that are used to live there, that used to thrive there because they had jobs. The economy is down. The rate of foreclosure in our state is the highest in the United States right now. Entire communities are boarded up. In a place where we live, half of our neighbors have left. Our neighborhood is like a ghost town. All the businesses that used to be thriving 2 years ago are no longer in existence. And now, because of this law, we're being boycotted. And so it's apparent that our leaders, our elected leaders, have not learned anything from the 80s when we had a governor called Evan Mecham that refused to recognize Martin Luther King's birthday. And Arizona suffered a big backlash, and we were the laughingstock of the nation only about 20 years ago. Here it is again. The governor doesn't care, so she signed this law. And what I wanted to go back a little bit to say is, like, this man that became a legislator, he was a bully in the neighborhood when my husband was growing up. He's still a bully right now. When he came and suggested this law, he's done a number of laws that have been, you know, little by little changing the ethnic makeup of our state, or how comfortable we feel about being ethnic in our state, I should say that. He first passed a law that was English only. Arizona has 21 federally recognized tribes. We are the home of the Navajo, the Hopi, Maricopa, Kokopa, you know, all the Havasupai, all these tribes that are trying so hard to maintain their language and their culture and their way of life. So he passed a law that, forget it, you cannot teach, if you receive state funds, you cannot teach your language. You cannot do anything in your language. He also was the sponsor of a bill right now that nobody's talking about, that anybody 21 and over can carry a concealed weapon in Arizona without paying a license, without taking a course on how to handle a gun. You just go and sign up and you have a concealed weapon license to walk around with a gun. Nobody's talking about that. And there's also a lot of criticism about this SB 1070 law being a smokescreen to hide all the economic failures of our elected officials. We do not have money for our educational system. We don't have money for our healthcare system.
For
police and fire and any of that. Everything is down. There has been a flight of people leaving. If people could leave and go to New Mexico, to California, to Utah, any place else, they have left already or they're planning to leave. So there's a flight about that. The law has not really brought any positive things to our state. It does not really solve any problem because it's a federal problem, and it does not really bring any economical gain to our state. So I'd like to stop here and ask Terry, who is a lawyer, to talk about the implications of this law on a state level and a federal level.
My name is Terry Murphy. I'm from Eugene. I've been an attorney in Oregon and California since 1990, the last 5 years an administrative law judge in Oregon. I don't know much at all, really, about the details of the situation in Arizona. But I can say that the attack on the Arizona immigration law was based on separation of powers concerns. Our system in this country is built around the idea that certain areas are reserved to the states and other areas are for the federal government to determine, and that where federal and state law conflict, that the supremacy clause can be invoked to say that the federal law, unless it is itself unconstitutional, trumps the state law. It is harder and harder to write laws that discriminate overtly against people based on their race and ethnicity, although it has been done many times in other countries. One thinks here of the Nazis or apartheid South Africa, and also here in the United States, for example, in the pre-civil rights era South. But with the advent of the 13th and 14th Amendments and the 1964 Civil Rights Act, it is now quite difficult to write a law in the United States that will withstand constitutional scrutiny, which overtly discriminates against a person or group of people based on their ethnicity or heritage. And so now, in order to try and achieve a result that is aimed at a particular group of people, it is necessary to try to come in, so to speak, through the back door. In the case of the situation that Zarco is telling us about, the immigration laws are an ideal way of doing this. There are legitimate concerns, legitimate reasons why there should not be unrestricted immigration in the United States. But when a law moves beyond regulating immigration and singles out particular groups of American citizens for special scrutiny, the situation becomes considerably more problematic from a constitutional standpoint. And in particular, the doctrine or the idea that has been referred to from time to time as racial profiling is troubling, particularly if the targets are American citizens. And there are a large and growing number of American citizens who are of Mexican ancestry, of Native American ancestry, or a combination of the two, who are potential targets for this sort of thing. The attack that was launched on the Arizona law was essentially a separation of powers attack. It was founded on the argument that by enacting a law in the field of immigration, the state of Arizona was exceeding state powers and coming into conflict with the Constitution, which assigns to the federal government the right to regulate immigration. And in a recent ruling, which is undoubtedly going to go up on appeal, a federal district judge in Arizona struck down the vast majority of the provisions of the Arizona law that we're hearing about today as being either unconstitutional or a violation of controlling federal statutes. So in a sense, the people who enacted the law in Arizona managed to get the worst of both worlds. They got the program and the notoriety that accompanied a law that was perceived by many people as being aimed at an ethnic minority, without actually producing any change on the ground in terms of what was being done for immigration. All that is left of the law after the judge's ruling is really a sort of a hollow shell. Years of litigation are sure to follow unless either the federal government decides to do something at the national level that renders the controversy obsolete, which at the moment doesn't appear terribly likely, or unless the citizens of Arizona act to pull their own statute off the books, which would make the case moot and end the battle. Unless one of those things happens, we can anticipate anywhere from 2 to 3 years of further litigation about this, probably much more, because the challenge that has been launched at the federal level is a challenge to the law as written. But as soon as specific persons are arrested or prosecuted under a law like this, they will then have the option of challenging the law not as written but as applied, and they'll be able to invoke the protections of the 13th and 14th Amendments, constitutional due process arguments, and a multitude of other arguments. So you could say that this law guarantees continuing employment for civil rights litigators, prosecutors, and criminal defense attorneys in Arizona. Because when you try to do something like this, you guarantee that if there's an effort to implement the law, that a parade of constitutional challenges will surely follow. Proponents of the law suggest, well, the problem really rests with the federal government. The federal government should do something more or different to change the immigration system in the United States, which is admittedly in a state of disarray. There are, of course, ways to bring that about. This is still a democracy, and it's possible for people in Arizona or any other state to seek to lobby and influence legislators and others in Washington to bring about this kind of change. And this, I think, is a much more legitimate approach than to enact legislation like the legislation we're hearing about here. And it is particularly troubling when legislation is perceived as an attack on specific ethnic minorities. That's something that really doesn't advance any cause that I would want to be associated with. The law is a poor guide to personal morality, certainly as compared to, say, the New Testament, because it really reflects the prejudices and beliefs of the government in the community that enacts it. And as Christians, I think we need to reflect, I need to reflect, on what, if anything, I should be doing or saying, even though I don't live in Arizona, about a law that targets a specific ethnic group.
Well, what's being said, it's said in Arizona that 70% of the population approve of this law. It's also being said that 70% of the population of the United States approve of this law. So this type of legislation could soon be coming to a community near you. It's very possible. Yes?
Are there churches in Arizona who support the law? And what basis do they use?
You know, I don't know if any church groups have actually come out for it, but thank God that in the last few weeks, a lot of church groups have come forward against it, which is what we've been waiting for. And I do want to say this. I'm not Lutheran, but the Lutherans, since the 70s and 80s, have been on the forefront of giving shelter to people fleeing the wars in Central America, the wars that our taxpayers' money pay for. Now, we're not only talking about the We're not talking about the rights of illegals, the civil rights of illegals. We're talking about the human rights of everybody. But we are talking about the civil rights of American citizens and legal immigrants to the United States. Yes?
Can you just say a little bit about what's happening because of this law that didn't used to happen and how it's affecting people?
What didn't used to happen, if someone was arrested for committing a crime, if someone was arrested and found out to be illegal, they were taken to the border and let go. That's what was happening until just recently. Now, if you were stopped for any minor infraction, you are asked for your papers, and you are put through the court system, and you are in prison in one of these private corporate detention centers, right? And so now, consequently, these prisons are being built all up and down the border from California all the way through Texas. They're looking for places to build these prisons. Yes.
Would you speak about law enforcement within the communities?
Law enforcement is torn, just like families are torn apart. I've been working for the Phoenix Police Department for 15 years on a community policing program. It's a wonderful program. They get to know everybody in their neighborhood, all the kids, their parents. Legal, they don't care. They don't ask about the legal status of their neighborhood. It's called public policing, right? And neighborhood policing. And when this happens, if a crime occurs, if a woman is mistreated or abused by her husband, she calls the police, and they come, right? If your house is being robbed next door, you call the police. You trust the police, they come. If you see drug deal going down, you call the police will come. This is good for law enforcement. Now people will not call the police, right? Plus now there's less police because there's no money for police. There's less fire, right? After school programs that get kids on the straight and narrow, they're no longer there. So now we have more kids in the streets. So this is something that's affecting all of us. Yes?
What about the law that, I don't know how much of this is rumor, but put the guns into any person's hands, and what is being done to monitor that?
Nothing.
Are they roaming the streets?
Well, we'll give you an example. We're going to show, we're running out of time, we're going to show some slides of one of the demonstrations that we had, and you're going to see this weird character dressed as the devil. That's me.
That weird character?
Yeah, the devil's me, and the other guy is our sheriff. So I play the role of the devil, and the sheriff and the governor are my minions doing my dirty work. But here's one of our leaders, Alfredo Gutierrez. He was a senator. He's been arrested recently for civil disobedience. And here's me strangling a Mexican, legal or otherwise, with Janet Brewer, our governor, and Joe Arpaio. So what we're doing as artists is going to the marches, the protests, and trying to bring a little comic relief to the people. And everybody loves it. Everybody wants to take pictures with the sheriff. And you see he has pink underwear on? That's what he makes the inmates wear, pink underwear, eat pink bologna, and they sleep in tents, in cots, in 115, 120 degree summers. This is not only Mexicans he's doing this to. This is for drunk drivers, people arrested for petty crimes, marijuana, whatever.
How has he gotten away with this for
we
so long?
We do not know how he's gotten
he's
away with
that position.
He's under he's investigation.
He's supported by the NRA.
Yeah. Now,
the whole law, the gun law, it was an NRA initiative. It's a hood for civil liberties, yeah, that people can carry guns.
Now, well, you might not see it here, but at this protest, there's a group led by a man named J.T. Redding. He's a neo-Nazi. I wish I would have taken this picture. He was there with other neo-Nazis with loaded, what are they called, AK-47? Yeah, they're there with automatic rifles, showing, you know, their bravado, And then they're surrounded by 20 or 30 heavily armed and you know, police in riot gear. I don't know if they were to protect the demonstrators or to protect the neo-Nazis. But it's surreal. It's out of this world. It's totally crazy.
And then the other thing I wanted to add is, like, the minute the law started being talked about, everybody started protesting. And it wasn't just the Mexicans and the immigrants. It was also the Native Americans. The Korean community came out. The Filipino community came out. Anybody who's brown and under suspicion of the law. And the law has just created this whole subclass of citizens with under the suspicion. If you're suspected of being an immigrant, what does an immigrant look like? They never said what it looks like. But you know, you're supposed to be walking around in corners, you're supposed to be driving around. These are some of the signs that people had during the demonstration. This was May 29th. We've been demonstrating since March.
Yeah, they
almost days. There's people doing prayer vigils. In the state capital, 24/7 for the last 3 months, because we all feel that this is a very unfair and very unnecessary.
What I don't see, I kind of understand how white America is, you know, kind of gets uneasy about the browning of America. I can see that. I can understand it, just having to deal with the change. What I don't understand is the hate that this fear breeds. Now, these people that are illegal, I'm not illegal, my family never came from Mexico. We were here when this was Mexico. But I know that the people that are here risk their life to come here. Somebody in their family has died crossing the border or has been killed in a drug violence in Mexico. I feel that's almost a safe statement to make. But they have no other choice. They have to, they're escaping what I consider to be the failed state of Mexico at this point. Yes?
From living far away, say in Seattle, the response of the community, parts of the community in Seattle was, okay, let's boycott Arizona to try to stop this law. And my thought is that when you speak about, it seems like boycotting is devastating economically.
It is. But we support the boycott. We support the boycott.
You do.
We have to stop this madness. We can't go on like that.
So in other words, the boycott Arizona is a good move, you think?
Well it's hurting everybody.
It's hurting everybody.
And we support the boycott, but it's killing us economically.
Yeah.
You know, we're artists. It's hard enough making a living as it is, being an artist. And now with this, it's even worse.
Kirsten, right?
Yeah.
Well, tell us what's happening in your state of Texas.
Yeah, so we were talking earlier. So in Houston and throughout Texas is known for having pretty loose borders. And it's unwritten policy in Texas. So we go through a couple different things. So I wanted to clarify one thing. Because I think this is a common confusion, the difference between race and ethnicity. So ethnicity, by the National Institutes of Health Standards, which we all abide by, there's only two ethnicities that are really recognized now. You're either Hispanic or non-Hispanic. And it's done as a different umbrella by which we categorize people because we are such a mixed society. Then you go down into the categories of race. And now when we run any large national health trial, we not only have our different race categories, so you can be Native American, you can be Pacific Islander, you can go through your different European categories. We verify that with asking about origin of where you were born and where both his parents were born. So I think it's important to understand there's a difference between race and ethnicity, and we keep that very clear for you. And there's only two ethnicities in the U.S. today, and that's actually true in Canada as well. So in Houston and throughout Texas, so I work partly for the Harris County Hospital District, which is the largest hospital district in North America right now. And so this greater city of Houston has about 4.5 million people in the Harris County Hospital District. We do about 20 million patient visits a year. And so about a third of all of our patients have been back and forth across the border within 2 weeks of being seen within our hospital district system. We never ask for ID. We have what's called a gold card. And the gold card is our version of how to track people in terms of retaining out their medical records. It's a huge problem. if somebody doesn't want to give you any documentation as to why they're there, we still have to be able to track them. We have to be able to retrieve their medical records. We have to have something, and you can't use a name and a birthday reliably because you have a certain amount of repetition that'll go on. The state of Texas, and especially the communities of Houston and San Antonio, first of all, Texas used to be Mexico, and so we tend to stand up. But it became a very practical issue, and it really started before the Bush era, that they realized in Texas that if we were to make strong immigrant laws, such as been made in Arizona, we would shut down the state. We could not possibly function as a state if we were to ever attempt to enforce law. And so, in part, it became a very, it's an issue of practicality. And our children could not be cared for, our homes couldn't be cared for, work would not get done in the state of Texas if we were to ever enforce a law so it's not done. But there has to be a certain amount of accommodations, and I think that this is where a lot of the debate comes in, is because the perception is that there's an overt utilization of resources that never get brought back into the system in large value, because if you're not here under documentation, you aren't paying taxes. This is a true statement. You are not paying taxes. The state of Texas gets around that a little bit because we don't have a state income tax. So we say no say. We don't really care that much. It's okay because we're not paying an income tax, and if somebody else isn't paying an income tax. There's been some interesting ideas on legislation in the state of Texas because they don't want to end up in the position that Arizona is, such as if you're going back across the border into Mexico, you would be taxed as you go back across the border. You'd be taxed on goods taxes because there is a lot of money that moves across the border every single day. And there's a lot of stolen goods that moves in both directions across the border every single day, and that's well recognized. But the state of Texas, I think, is really, and they've really stayed off, with rare exception, are they using any private contractors for prisons, anything outside of El Paso. As you move back up towards Arizona, that direction out of El Paso, you see a little bit, but for the most part, there's very little because the state has accepted the importance of it. But it does have quite a bit of a role into our society, and if you don't speak Spanish, it's a huge detriment. That I speak very poor Spanish, and it's a huge detriment to me being able to do my job every day. And I feel guilty every single day that I can't communicate well enough with my patients. It's a huge hindrance. But it really, it's an example where the Latino culture blends in beautifully, and people have really kind of taken their hands and said, you know, this is a part of our home, this is a part of our community. For those of you who take care of Latino patients who are also in healthcare, most of the time they're our favorite patients because they are so compliant. I mean, I cannot get any baby as compliant as some of my Latino patients. We absolutely adore them because of that strong sense of family and really wonderful people to live next door to. So I think it's a very, Texas is a little bit of a different example, a very integrated community because they acknowledge the importance of the Latino community as I know.
Thank you. I wanted to say one thing in closing. The migration continues. People are leaving Arizona. Illegal and legal immigrants are leaving Arizona. They're coming to you across America, desperately looking for work. So that's where you come in. Yes, sir.
I just wanted to add that what's going on in Arizona obviously is making news around the United States. I was in Chile a couple months ago, and right after the earthquake. And what's going on in Arizona is in the newspapers in Chile. And my Chilean friends were saying, another example of American hatred. So we're painting ourselves in a negative picture here.
The black guy. Yes, sir.
In Oregon, there are many illegals working. I asked my friend, I said, well, do you have a card, an ID card working? Well, yeah. Is it genuine? No. But the joke is that there's so many of those. Some of the employers have never seen an original, authentic. However, they do have their Social Security taken out, which they will never, ever get. There's also unemployment insurance. That is not possible. And they have taxes withheld.
Yeah. And that's not to say that some aren't committing crimes. There are people that are committing crimes. Those people that are committing crimes should be incarcerated. Many of them should be deported. But those people that are here to contribute, I think, should have a path to legalization.
I was a little bit disturbed by the use of the word hatred. And you said that 70% of the people in this country support this. I don't think 70% of Americans hate anybody. And I think it's frustration, really, what's going on. The federal government is not doing what they're supposed to do. I mean, that goes back to 86, and people are just getting so frustrated.
Well, no, I have a real hard time with the word hatred, too. It's a very strong word.
I know.
But when you see the result of this frustration, the way it manifests itself, it's not a word that's too strong to use. It really is. It destroys people's, it destroys their lives.
I saw another survey that said that when those same people, if they were asked if they're employed and paying taxes, is that a difference? And there, they were in favor. They said, well, yeah, but that's a different thing. All of a sudden, they become human. They're real people. Yeah, and that's just amazing.
What you said about this kind of legislation is spreading to other places. Just the other day, I got an email pointing out that there is a man running in Minnesota on the platform of putting this type of law in, should he be elected, and Target Corporation has given him a huge donation. And the suggestion was being made, we need to boycott Target. Well, I'm running out of people, you know, to shop at. I already boycott Walmart, and I now have to boycott Target. Well, I'll gladly do it.
We vote with our dollars.
Yeah.
That's what it boils down to.
And if people really don't feel that animosity, if you want to use a kinder word than hatred, you have to put your money where your mouth is. Mm-hmm. And you need to let people
know. Well, let's have two more comments because we have to go for dinner before the law.
Dinner's till 6 o'clock, don't worry.
For people in Minnesota, Mark and I made a list of the things that we buy at Target that we can't find somewhere else. Anything that we can't find somewhere else, really, we don't need it anyways. Yeah.
Jarko, would you speak to the point about folks that are coming in daily are being considered drug mules when, in fact, the drugs are shipped across in big trucks and the arms that go back in big trucks?
Oh, yeah. They're finding out about the border agents that are being paid off.
Yeah.
To let big trucks go.
I mean, it's very common that there is a certain amount that is moved through private citizens, but the vast majority of what gets moved across the border is pure bribery across the border. I mean, it's U.S. people being bribed. So it's kind of,
yeah.
Not being in the mainstream of me personally, it's hard for me sometimes to know what am I being told that's right, what's being told that's truthful, and what's just rumors and lies. How do you get to the other Americans and let us know, how do we know that what we're being fed is the truth? I heard people were driving around in cars with guns helping themselves to brown. I mean, that's scary to think that vigilantes are running around shooting everybody.
Well, that's where we're afraid. That's what we're afraid of. I mean, under these circumstances, this environment, you can see now how ethnic cleansing could happen in this country. Paul, how about back here?
It always feels like sitting outside of Arizona, you know, what can we do? And as I think about that, it seems to me one of the most important things we can do is watch how this bill in some form or another is going to crop up in our own states. I know the immigration rights people in Seattle have talked about how it's going to crop up in other states. And it seems that if we keep our eyes open and can stop it before it comes into law, then we've done a lot in our own states.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I forgot to mention this too, and this is a real important point, is that Russell Pierce attributes his passion for this law on his Mormon faith, to abide by the law. Okay, now, I think that's really important because he comes out publicly and says his Mormon Christian faith inspires him to do what he's doing.
That's what he was saying.
Not brother's keeper.
Yeah, don't forget about that. Yeah.
We have a lot of agreement in this room, and sometimes it's helpful to recognize what other people are thinking and saying.
in this sort of case, I think this hits at it, it's really important for us to know what the seductive things are being said in support of legislation like this. Things like, it's America, we speak English here. The melting pot is the model of what America has been. I personally think the melting pot has changed, and diversity is something that we're proud of and we cherish. But can you help us know some of the things that have been said by the, I shouldn't say by the Glenn Becks or the others who would lead us to believe that, oh, this is a good idea?
Well, the fact is, and for people that are going to be here for next week for Abriendo Caminos, when you hear this whole thing, why don't they learn English? All the young kids that are here, they're already speaking English. They speak English. They're bilingual. Their parents are struggling with the language, and they would love to learn it if they could.
But so what is it that the 70% of Arizonans are hearing that makes them think?
That they're taking our jobs. That they're responsible for the economy, for the downturn in the economy. That crime is up. Crime is in fact down. Yes.
Well, you know, if people don't like what's going on in Arizona, it was referred to at the beginning, maybe you did, write to your congresspeople and tell them to support the Constitution and the laws that we have on our book, because that's what we're saying, is it's the federal government's responsibility to keep our borders reasonable. I mean, to keep the population manageable, to welcome the legal people, and to somehow or other deal with this problem of everybody wanting to come here. And if you don't want it to happen in your state, then get your federal government representatives to have the courage to fight to do what the law says to do.
Well, I'd love to say that this is what would be so easy to be done. I don't know if you remember in 2008 when McCain, who's our senator, ran for president, immigration was in the forefront of his agenda. He was going to reform immigration, which is what we need. We have a system that's inadequate right now.
And he wanted a
path to citizenship. Now he's mama bopper. He won't talk about it.
Right.
Then Jenna Napolitano, who was our governor, left to be Homeland Security right now. She hasn't really done a lot to change everything. She's continued the same tactics that Bush has put in place for Homeland Security. But she did come around and tell us that the border is more secure now than ever before. There is like 3,000 people more secure in the border than before. So there is not that crime. And the governor comes out and says, oh, we have to do this because the crime is up and the Border Patrol cannot back her up with her data. She's wrong when she says that. There's a lot of misinformation going around. And what it is really is just a smokescreen to blame the immigrant for the lack of economic opportunities that we have in Arizona. That's what's happening.
Why are we using the word immigrants? I think the whole issue is illegal immigrants. I mean, legal immigrants, I don't...
Let me tell you why. We would love to be legal. Where's the paper that we can sign?
How many people can we take in at a time? That's a frightening question.
So I think that's why some people try to use documented and undocumented, because it's not that you're necessarily here legally or illegally. So a lot of times, as you know, if you're born on U.S. soil, then you have naturalized citizenship. And so there's quite a bit that goes on the border states for exactly that reason. And many times, you know, we'll get parents that they know their child has an issue that needs to be dealt with right at birth, they'll come across. But the problem is now you cannot separate mother and child, and so now you're in this quasi-land where somebody's not really here illegally. They're here under the values and the common laws that are allowed establishment. So that's why I think some people use the term documented and undocumented. So it's not a question of legal or illegal. It has to do with your documentation.
I hate to interrupt one more time, but we're the only country in the world that has automatic citizen by being born in the country.
I think it's
Nepal is the other one. I'm
just going to
do
it.
If I'm incorrect, I think correct.
Mexico, if you're born in Mexico, so you're Mexican.
Almost all of the South American and Central American countries.
Okay, I stand corrected, but I have this correct for years.
That provision allows people born in the United States to be considered Americans by reason of being born here. It's very old.
Yeah.
It's in the federal constitution.
I know it is.
It has been for many, many years, and it could only be changed by U.S. constitutional amendment, not by action at the state level.
You have a question here?
I was just in response to some of what's been said. The other front on this is comprehensive immigration reform. We have regular forums in the Quad Cities that we don't publicize for local communities to come and ask questions. And we bring in immigration lawyers from Des Moines 3 hours a week because that is the closest immigration lawyer. And they tell us things like what immigration law that used to be this thick is now this thick. And it's completely uncomprehendable. And it's incredibly difficult to move through. And if you have even one question, it's going to take thousands of dollars and thousands of hours to find someone who will take you on to help you sort through the question. And in parts of this country, you're going to have to drive hours to find that person. Comprehensive immigration reform is something that we have turned our heads on for far too long.
And I think everybody wants comprehensive reform. We do want that. Yes, back there.
Well, hoping to come around full circle, if that the question has got to be for us again, what is our responsibility in terms of social justice and the Christian Church? And there are going to be people that agree when federal reform comes through too, if it does come through. We're not all going to agree about that, but we're going to have to figure out what our values as Christians tell us to do when it comes to issues like this. And that's the real challenge.
Yes.
Well, and also just to add on to the whole broken system, I know people that have given their fingerprints, they have all their information in the federal system, and they're just waiting in line. They're not illegal, but they're not legal yet. They're just in this quasi-federal space.
And they will be deported.
Yeah. And the other thing, I get really tired of this whole verbiage about women just coming over and having their babies over here. Let me tell you, it's not easy to just come over and have a baby on U.S. soil. I mean, I know people have come from Mexico. I know people who have come from Peru. I know people have come all over South and Central America. And it's not, you know, it's not just a matter of jumping over the border. These people have really risked their lives, and then you can die trying to get here.
That's right.
There is one group of Mexicans, though, that really are on the side of the sheriff. That's the coyotes that now bring them over illegally,
exactly.
And now they can bring the price up. Well, let's tighten the border. Well, now it's $5,000 instead of $2,500 or $3,000.
Yeah, why don't we charge everybody $1,000, $2,000, and then we get the money, and the coyotes don't. The drug lords don't.
Oh, every time they cross the border.
Oh, yeah. They don't just walk over by the Sherpa, essentially.
And also, one of the big questions is, why don't they stand in line and come here legally? Well, that would be great, except it costs a lot of money to be a legal immigrant, and you have to have papers from the country of origin. What we don't realize is that the indigenous people of Latin America to come here, they don't have papers. They don't own property. They don't have passports. In many cases, they're not even citizens of their own country. See, we don't know that. We don't realize that. Stand in line. And the Latinos that are here, they say the same thing. Well, I came to this country legally. You should come here legally. Well, yeah, they would come here legally if they could. And if they could, they would stay in their country of origin. They love their countries. They would stay there if they could raise their, if they could feed their family 3 decent meals a day. And if they could get a halfway decent education, they would stay in Mexico, in Guatemala, in Latin America. They love their country. They don't have any love for their governments, but they love their country. And they love their families.
I know that's true. I don't doubt that.
We love family values in this country, right?
And work out there.
And work out there, yeah.
You know, one comment of this study back here about the crossing the border and having a baby, that isn't just applies to Mexicans at all. Although I talked to Congressman Gilbray from Southern California, and he said that 90% of the births there are to illegals that cross over the day. You know, they can come over Mexican citizens. But they also, there's been a big thing set up when Hong Kong was afraid of being really clamped down by China, a lot of the wealthy Hong Kongese, or whatever you call them, came to this country with package deals, like travel agents. We'll come over here, it costs you like maybe $50,000 after leaving here, so if something happens in Hong Kong, you got an anchor.
So the national statistics, so I do high-risk obstetrics, the national statistic is somewhere between 15 and 20% of all our babies in the ICU are naturalized births. So about one in every five complicated enough births to cause $1,000 or more a day of care is here as a naturalized birth. Now that spans a lot of different reasons why. And it's no different than what I would do if I had an ultrasound done in Senegal and somebody said your baby has a massive heart defect, you bet you're going to find a way to come over here if you can where we can correct that defect. But that does not take away the drain on the system. So if you want to vote with your dollars, you have, because they are not being delivered in the private hospitals in America. They're delivered within our public hospital system. And right now, with healthcare reform, we're going to get killed in those hospital systems because we have to have something called a proven medical home. And a proven medical home means I have to be able to trace somebody's medical records all the way across for a certain number of months. And that has to be in place by 2014. So we have huge problems on the books with how we're going to do this. So for those of you from Minneapolis, you know, pay your Hennepin County hospital tax. Because that is where these very, very costly births are happening. So that's our national statistic, one in five.
Sending to Korea, they did the same type of deal. If you're a rich Korean, you can go over here and have your baby.
Absolutely. Saudi Arabia, we see it all the time. And we, to a certain extent, cater to that.
So we haven't even talked about the Dream Act.
Yeah. Are you coming for another hour?
And we're receiving emails from Tucson of college kids who are about to graduate from college are being deported. And that's happening.
We don't need the educated ones here. Then we're really in trouble. That's where the fear comes from.
One more comment.
Well, I was just confused by the 70% numbers. Did they surprise me? So I want to make sure I heard it right. 70%, you said, of Arizonans are in support of the law, right? That makes sense to me. But I thought, did you say 70% of U.S. citizens as
That's
well?
What we've read.
Because I'm wondering where you read that, because everything I've read leads me to believe that Arizona's become like the laughing stock of the country because
both
the law is so absurd.
Both things are going on.
So, okay.
See, I don't believe that statistic either, because if you take Texas and California alone and account for the Latino background, you're at about
40%
of the population.
Could be a
lie.
Could be a delusion.
Okay.
One announcement. At 6:45, there will be a meeting of those of us who speak Spanish and who might be willing to help out tomorrow. Saturday, some of the Abriendo Camino participants start coming in. So I think it's right here at 6:45.
Thank you for coming, everybody.